Wald, eine Kulturgeschichte, der Podcast zur
In the Forest, a Cultural History. The podcast for the exhibition of the same name as accompaniment in the exhibition or for when you're out and about. This episode is about a man who dedicated his life to the forest. Bruno Mansel was a seeker and an explorer, a free spirit, a self-taught researcher, and a very curious person.
Wir erzählen die Geschichte von Bruno Mansel.
Here we tell the story of Bruno Mansel, a rainforest activist and champion for its protection and the people who call the forest home. My name is Christoph Keller, and I talk to Lukas Straumann, managing director of the Bruno Mansel Fund.
Lukas Straumann, wenn wir heute auf die Satellitenkarte
Lukas Straumann, if you look today at a satellite map of the Borneo forest of Sarawak, where Bruno Mansel spent many years of his life, what do we see?
Wir sehen wenige, ganz wenige Gebiete.
We see few, very few, areas of pristine forest, that is, contiguous intact primary forest areas. Instead, we see many areas of secondary forest in which a finely branched network of roads spreads out, kind of like blood vessels, capillaries. The logging roads we see on the satellite image would span the Earth twice, and that in a state that is only three times the size of Switzerland. And that shows to what extent the forest there has been degraded, how intensely the forest is being used instead of conserving the primeval forest. So the primeval forests, which are many thousands of years old, were cleared, and today we have before us huge degenerated forest areas. If these areas are left untouched for, say, 30 or 40 years, they could recover very well, given the tropical climate there. But the huge old stems, of course, have gone for good and are missing.
Und warum?
And why this destruction?
Tropische Harthölzer gehören zu den wertvollsten.
Tropical hardwoods are among the most valuable building materials. They are among the most valuable raw materials in furniture production, and they were fostered quite deliberately, not least for political reasons, by the government of the state of Sarawak, where Bruno Mansel lived for 6 years. These hardwoods were worth billions, and this money naturally attracted people to the forest.
Das Geld fließt ja nicht in die Taschen der
The money does not flow into the pockets of the workers who work in the forest, who instead actually benefits from logging.
Die Hauptprofite aus dem Holzschlag sind bei 6 großen Konzernen, die alle mehr oder weniger mit
The main profits from logging have ended up in the hands of 6 large corporations, all of which are more or less closely linked with the political decision makers. These 6 timber companies have all diversified since then. They are now into tourism, real estate development, shipping, and so on. They had to diversify because, of course, the forest is largely depleted and no longer delivers the yields it did in the 80s and 90s. The local indigenous communities, people who have been living in the forest for centuries, using the forest sustainably, have benefited little. Originally, they lived in the forest as hunters and gatherers. Later as farmers cultivating rice, among other products. They were promised development and prosperity through the exploitation of wood. In fact, these people are still very poor today. They may have a road, but they don't have a car to drive on it. They often tell us, we want to protect the forest because the forest is our supermarket. We don't need money to go shopping because the forest is our food supply. They say the forest is our bank. Everything we need is there. We often also hear that the forest is the capital of the poor. So if this forest is cut down, then the people who live largely outside the money economy are deprived of their basic supply options, their raw material. And of course, we now see the consequences.
Aufnahmen von Bruno Mansa.
Following a message from 1st of August 97. From a member of the Penang tribe in Sarawak to President Bill Clinton.
Der Mann, über den wir heute sprechen, Bruno Mansel, das ist einer, der das ganz früh erkannt.
The man we are talking about today is someone who recognized this very early on, that the forest is the people's bank, as you say, Lukas Straumann. Bruno Mansel was in the Malaysian state on and off for during 6 years from 1984 to 1990, living with the Penan people, sharing their everyday life, their way of life, and drawing the world's attention to the destruction of the rainforest. Who was Bruno Manzer?
Wer war Bruno Manzer?
Bruno Manzer war im Grunde genommen ein Suchender. Er war ein Aussteiger im klassischen Sinn.
Bruno Manzer was basically a seeker. He was a free spirit in the classical sense of the term, and an explorer, a self-taught researcher and a very curious person. And I think he was also a philosopher, not least because he asked himself, how did people live originally? How did people live without money? That was an important question to him. And Bruno was fascinated when he heard that in Borneo, the indigenous Penan lived in the forest in a completely nomadic way, without agriculture or animal husbandry. That was something that really interested him, that attracted him, and he wanted to live this kind of original life.
With all my muscles, with all my blood, with all my hair, and with all which is in my body, I ask for help, that he talks with our government in Sarawak, that they call back the companies who destroy.
Bruno Manzer in diesen Wald eingedrungen und hat sich diesen Wald.
Now, in a way, Bruno Manzer intruded and appropriated this forest, at least to a certain extent. Could you briefly explain how he went about this?
Also Bruno Manzer war natürlich unglaublich geschickt und auch in handwerklichen, praktischen Fertigkeiten.
Well, Bruno Manzer was of course incredibly skilled, not least in manual practical terms. For example, he learned how to hunt with the blowpipe, a technique that is extremely complex and demanding. To be able to hunt with a blowpipe, you obviously first need to find a blowpipe. It is made from a special kind of wood, a very specific kind of blowpipe tree that has been used for centuries and which only grows in certain places. Then you need darts. The darts are made from the spines of a palm tree, from its prickly shoots. And then, quite essentially, you also need a poison, because a dart alone cannot kill an animal.
Damit er das alles tun konnte, natürlich erste Voraussetzung war, sich anzufreunden mit den.
In order to be able to do this, he first needed to make friends with the Penan, with the people who lived in and by the forest, and also to understand what the forest meant to the Penan, not only with regard to the economy, but also in cosmological terms. That's an intense and complex learning process, I imagine.
Absolut. Interessant ist, dass Bruno eigentlich einen bewusst naiven Zugang gewählt hat.
Absolutely.
Das sieht man ja auch.
It's interesting that Bruno actually deliberately chose a naive approach. You can see it in his writings. He chooses a naive language. I mean, he actually acts like Humboldt, who discovered blank spots on the map. Relying on this deliberate naivete, which was also his natural way, he approached the people and said, "Hello everyone, I'm Bruno." He had learned a few words of Penan in advance, Aku Bruno, and may I stay with you a little? May I live with you for a while? May I learn from you? I want to get to know about your life. And he was received in a very hospitable way. Of course, the Penan were surprised. They asked themselves, what does he want from us? A friend of Bruno, Mitang Urut, commented that Bruno Manzer seemed to him like a symbol of Western society. The complete individualist who arrives by himself, who travels far away from his family. Because for the Penan, family and community are essential. Especially in the forest, it is important to be able to count on a community. Just think of all the natural hazards, of the food supply you depend on. People depend on each other, even if there are only a few of them. That is perhaps why the forest is also a social, a community-building factor. Not in the way, as Rousseau thought, that the so-called savage lives alone in the forest, but in the sense that the forest creates a community. And it is interesting to see that Bruno Manzer ultimately found a great community-building role for himself, a connecting role between Switzerland and these indigenous communities in the rainforest of Borneo. And we still feel this community today. We live it to this day.
Spüren wir bis heute und die, die leben wir auch bis heute.
Nach der Sage war ein Krot. Er hat zugeschaut, wie die Penan die Sage hergestellt haben. Die Penan haben sie. Er musste an den Sagenbäumen an den Stamm klopfen. eine Kerbe machen und einen Stamm klopfen. Nachher ist es schön, haben sie noch müssen die roten Taschen drunter stellen.
Also gewissermaßen eine Wahlverwandtschaft, die Bruno Mansa da gesucht hat in diesem Wald. Jetzt hat er diesen Wald ja aber auch.
So, in a way, Bruno Mansa was in search of elective affinities in the forest. But he also carefully documented what he saw. He was a tireless documenter of the forest. He read the forest, a bit like a book. Now tell us, Lukas Straumann, what is the value of Bruno Mansa's documentary work?
Also das ist natürlich der klassische Weg des Naturforschers. Also in Südostasien muss man in dem Zusammenhang.
Well, this is of course the classical path of the naturalist. In Southeast Asia, we must remember Alfred Wallace, the great British explorer and collector, who in Sarawak, where Bruno Mansa lived, came to very similar conclusions about evolution at practically the same time as Charles Darwin did. And by the way, it is debatable who first came up with the idea of mutation and selection, given the biodiversity Wallace encountered in the forest. I think that although Bruno Mansa was not an academically trained researcher, he chose a very scientific approach. He sketched and he collected. He documented, and of course, all this is in line with the natural research tradition of understanding the forest, the plants, the insects, etc. He drew them, and he fully documented all this in his research diary, the so-called Diaries from the Rainforest.
Als ich
1984 hier nach Borneo kam, nach Sarawak, waren die Holzgesellschaften eigentlich noch ziemlich weit talwärts. Und sie hatten so die ersten Pnan-Gebiete zerstört im Apo und im unteren Tuto-Gebiet. Und eigentlich dann 1986, da wurde eine Brücke gebaut über den Tuto-Fluss und von dort an begann die Erschließung der Nomadengebiete. Und bis heute würde ich sagen, sind zwei Drittel der gesamten Penan-Gebiete sind zerstört worden, das heißt gelockt worden. Und zerstört heißt, die Penan finden nicht mehr genügend Nahrung, um ein glückliches Leben führen zu können.
Jetzt schauen wir doch ein bisschen auf die andere Seite seines Lebens, nämlich was er hier in der Schweiz auch gemacht hat und getan hat. Was waren denn so, einmal ganz allgemein gesagt, seine Leistungen?
Now let's look a bit at the other side of his life, at what he did here in Switzerland. Generally speaking, what were his achievements in bringing the rainforest closer to this very distant part of the world?
Also man wusste ja schon seit den 70er Jahren, dass der Tropenwald gefährdet ist und dass der abnimmt. Also ich mag mich erinnern an so WWF-Heftchen über den Regenwald.
Well, we have known since the 1970s that the tropical forest is endangered and that it is steadily decreasing. For instance, I well remember this WWF booklet on the rainforest from this time. But Bruno Mansa raised the issue to a political level in the 1980s in a completely different way, by saying, the deforestation in Southeast Asia has something to do with us, because at the time, a lot of timber, including tropical woods, was still being imported in Western Europe. In 1992, he staged a hunger strike in front of the federal parliament and demanded that the import of tropical timber from Malaysia be banned. At the time, he failed. But vindication came 12 years later when Parliament passed a law making the declaration of woods mandatory. Since then, the origin of woods, for example for furniture, must be declared, and that was one of his demands. However, it was only a secondary demand after his push for a total import ban had failed.
Er war ja ein Erzähler auch dieses Waldes. Er hat diesen Wald.
He was a storyteller, not least about the rainforest. He not only documented the forest, he also talked about it. How important was that?
Das war natürlich sehr wichtig. Also das war ja auch die klassische Projektionsfläche. Man denkt, ja, der Mansa, der hat das gemacht, was wir
That was very
wollen.
Important, of course. He also provided a surface onto which people could project all their hopes and wishes, in the sense of, why can't I do what Bruno Mansa did? He left his familiar world and went off to live alone in the rainforest, while I'm sitting here in my office in this lousy weather. Maybe I should do something like that too. He demonstrated that we all can live our lives in a completely different way, if only we want to. At the same time, of course, his was a very individualistic way of life. Not everyone can just throw in the towel and say, I'm going to live in the forest. But that was also his special personality. He was prepared to make all the sacrifices and take on everything that this entailed. Spezielle
Persönlichkeit, dass er auch bereit war, all die Opfer in Kauf zu nehmen und auf sich zu nehmen, die das mit sich brachte.
So you also see the rivers here 10 years ago. These rivers were clear water. You could see the fish, you know, the back of the fish coming out of the water. And now the stones are very slippery from the mud.
Nun ist ja das alles, Sie haben es gesagt, Lukas Straumann.
Now all this, as you said, Lukas Straumann, is still in danger. Actually even more in danger than before. Where do we stand today with regard to the rainforest?
Also die Regenwälder von Südostasien gehören zu den bedrohtesten.
Well, the rainforests of Southeast Asia are among the most threatened rainforests on Earth. They are one of the large rainforest regions along with the Congo and the Amazon. But Southeast Asia has a smaller landmass. This means the ports are closer, the timber can be cut and shipped more easily and efficiently, and then channeled into the export market. We see this in central Borneo, one of the world's core biodiversity areas, where the rainforest is still under severe threat, still in severe decline. I just want to bring up the issue of palm oil plantations. So all the lowland rainforests in the Malaysian part of Borneo are already gone. There are still certain areas left in Brunei. There are still some forests in Indonesia. But the threat is still there. And the question is, of course, are we as an international community, especially as a rich country like Switzerland, ready to do something to protect these forests, together with the nation states that are home to these forests? Because basically, this is a heritage of humankind.
Der Bruno Manser Fonds kämpft ja unermüdlich für dieses Erbe auch von Bruno Manser.
Bruno Manser fought tirelessly for this heritage. Where do we stand today in terms of political awareness, in terms of political action?
Also ich glaube, es gibt ein sehr großes allgemeines Bewusstsein, gerade im Kontext mit dem Klimawandel, der Klimakrise, dass die Welt.
Well, I think there is a great general awareness nowadays, especially in the context of climate change. The climate crisis. We have begun to understand that the forests play an important role for the climate. The great difficulty is turning this general awareness and possibly ideas or proposals for solutions into actions on the ground, given all the local difficulties. What exactly does it mean if rainforests are to be protected? It means that instead of an oil palm plantation, where one can make an annual profit of $3,000 per hectare, you have to protect a forest that makes a profit of maybe only $30, so you have a factor of 100. But at the same time, the forest is, of course, of central importance in the long term for the climate and for biodiversity. So our experience has shown that the best way to achieve a noticeable effect is by working together with local people. The local communities know about the value of the forest. They also have a long-term interest. They want their children and grandchildren to be able to live in the forest or from the forest. But at the same time, these people also want to live a modern and self-determined life. And in our project, we basically try to make that possible. Therefore, we are focusing strongly on so-called agroforestry systems, with the idea that certain areas, primary forests that have survived, must be protected at all costs. But we also have to think about how we are going to use the degraded forests, where not so many old trees are left. Are there any traditional forms for cultivation that could be adapted and modernized so that people could earn an income and live on this income in the long term without destroying the forest?
Im Wald, eine Kulturgeschichte. In dieser Episode haben wir die Geschichte von Bruno Manser erzählt, dem Waldschützer-Abenteurer-Aktivisten und
Forscher. In this episode we told the story of Bruno Manser, the forest conservationist, adventurer, activist and researcher who has been reported missing since the 25th of May 2000. A conversation with Lukas Straumann, the executive director of the Bruno Mansel Fund, with original sounds and recordings of Bruno Mansel provided by the archives of the Bruno Mansel Fund. The questions came from Christoph Keller. The translations were read by Sam Ammann. This podcast is available in and beyond the exhibition on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and wherever good podcasts are obtainable, as well as on the website of the Swiss National Museum. The podcast, In the Forest, A Cultural History, is a production of Podcast Lab, www.podcastlab.ch.